The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the February-March issue of AARP Magazine and Timing Aloud, probably a little bit from the New York Times. And today's programming is generously underwritten by Saliba Chiropractic. Saliba Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. And now, last week when I left you in the middle of an article from the AARP magazine about how to launch your kid into life. Because we've got so many kids in this generation who are still having trouble getting launched into the business world and on their own and out of the house. So I had to stop before we got through. I'm going to take it up again. The right way to launch a kid. We covered demand a plan. And then rule two was be specific and explicit. And now we are at rule three. Set your limits. Although you've heard this before, it bears repeating. Helping your kid shouldn't get in the way of your own financial well-being. That's especially important because you're probably at an age when your earnings are peaking and you could be power-saving for retirement. Your kids will be grateful for your caution, eventually. Hastings says, the best gift you can give your child is your own financial independence. But spouses often disagree about the help they should give. Liz Hovey, 57, a New York City college instructor, says that because she and her husband have different family backgrounds, she expects it will be difficult for them to decide when and how to draw the line when it comes to financial help for their children after college. Hovey got a preview of the issue last year when the couple's daughter didn't follow through on a promise to work over the summer. It's not easy for my husband and me to agree on how to enforce the consequences, she admits. Things can get particularly sticky in blended families, where a parent and step-parent may feel disparate levels of responsibility toward the same child. The advice? Trust your gut. Sure, you can review your finances. Try the AARP Retirement Calculator at aarp.org/retirement. But there are simpler ways to test if you're too generous. Is your credit card debt rising? Do you resent your child's standard of living? That annoyance is a sign, says Brad Klontz, who teaches financial psychology at Creighton University. Form a united front. Be open with your spouse or your ex about how much you want to give, since that's often influenced by your upbringing, says Klontz. Discuss how your parents dealt with this issue. Find common ground and promise never to give money to an adult child in secret. Next, prepare for problems. Stuff happens. A job doesn't work out, or a friend's destination wedding goes over budget. You'll have to use your judgment as to how much slack you offer. Sometimes it's no slack. A few years ago, Louis Barajas, 56, a certified financial planner based in Southern California, gave his then 23-year-old daughter a $1,000 interest-free loan to pay off high-interest credit card debt. The condition he set was that she repay him a minimum of $100 a month. There were times when it wasn't easy for her to pay me, and I let her be uncomfortable, he says. After she settled the debt in 7 months, Barajas gave the money back to her as a gift and reward. The point is, she learned the discipline of paying me, he says. Other situations call for more flexibility. When Hastings' granddaughter was hospitalized with pneumonia last year and at risk for permanent lung damage if she relapsed, Hastings and her husband offered to pay for a nanny to care for the child for 6 months so her parents could go to work and not worry about sending their daughter back to daycare. The advice. Enforce the rules. Are you lending money to your child, perhaps to buy a car or house? Insist that your child make payments as agreed, ideally in writing, or suffer the consequences. When Hastings lent her daughter and son-in-law money for a house, she used a mortgage servicer that helps relatives lend money to one another. Bend the rules. Don't dole out cash every time your child is short on money. But emergencies, particularly health-related ones, can be legitimate exceptions. Just guard against pleas for help that go from being emergencies to habits. Consider pulling the plug. No matter how little help you're giving your adult child, Klontz advises, reassess your support if you see no forward motion. Danger signs. Your child continues to hold out for the perfect job, cycling through a series of jobs where my boss doesn't appreciate me, or he collects master's degrees like merit badges. Help without money. You don't need to pay up to provide assistance. You have resources and access to deals your child can't get. As much as you might want your kids out of the house, letting them live at home, paradoxically, can help launch them, if you handle it right. Ann Helmers, 60, and her husband Terry, 64, housed their son and daughter after their respective college graduations. They stayed for free, says Ann, a director of career services at the University of Miami. But that was the limit of what we felt was appropriate. Barajas, on the other hand, suggests charging rent. When the kids move out, he says, you can give them back the money to help them get started. The advice. Embrace discomfort. To give your child an incentive to leave, ask for contributions to household upkeep, either with money from a not-so-dream job or via household chores. For more motivation, hold back on paying for creature comforts such as dinners out and gym memberships, says financial planner Ann Chernish. Get package deals. Let your child buy services through you for a better price than he can get on his own. A cell plan, for one, or health insurance if your child is under 26. The Helmerses let their children stay on their auto insurance policy if the kids pay their share of the premium. The discount was substantial for them, Ann says. Now from AARP, here's an article on bucket list cruises for 2018. Come sail away. Swimming with sea turtles off the Galapagos, exploring the wilderness and wonders of the Panama Canal, channeling Cary Grant on an Atlantic crossing. Our intrepid writers indulge in cruise experiences that speak to their souls. Will one of these trips speak to yours? Trip 1, An Elegant Ocean Journey. In the Atlantic, old world charm meets modern sensibility on the Queen Mary 2 by Robert Bianco. The last place on earth I thought I'd ever want to be was on a ship in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. This was back in October 1992 when I was still skeptical about cruising. My parents had asked me to join their seafaring getaway, in part so I could schlep their bags, but I was sure I'd get seasick and even more certain I'd be bored, trapped in a floating hotel with nothing to do and too much to eat. Still, off we flew on the now-defunct superfast Concorde from New York City to London to board Cunard's Queen Elizabeth II, 70,000 tons and nearly the length of 3 football fields, in Southampton, England, for a 6-night voyage back to New York. To my surprise, the instant the ship let loose the lines that tied it to the pier, I felt all my worries loosen as well. I'd soon understand why, for so many travelers, this voyage is a kind of fantasy fulfilled, and why A Crossing on Cunard was in Patricia Schultz's book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. I crossed the pond 5 more times on the QE2 before the ship went out of service in 2008, and have crossed on its larger, grander replacement, the Queen Mary 2, 15 times since that ship debuted in 2004. Its stunning $132 million remastering was completed in 2016. Clearly, I'm addicted. But I find that each crossing feels different. I've sailed in calm seas and fierce storms, stayed in tiny rabbit warren inside cabins and spacious balcony accommodations, experienced vivacious table mates, including a couple from Scotland who have become dear friends, and some quiet companions. On some trips, I did little more than read, nap, and dine. Others were a non-stop 7-day frenzy of activities, encompassing everything from highbrow lectures to country line dancing with a British twist. Yet, each Cunard crossing has also offered the same comforting mix of modern technology. Now there's Wi-Fi, of course, and old-world elegance. Some crew members today wear fez-like red hats and red jackets with gold trim, plus white gloves. The combination is what you might expect from a 178-year-old British institution now owned by the very American Carnival Corporation. The approximately 2,700 passengers I join for each crossing are always a diverse crowd, from European couples with small children to retired American CEOs to the occasional rock star, Rod Stewart, for one. Most get into the spirit of the iconic ocean liner. Day wear is casual, but evenings are a week-long dress-up party. On 3 nights, guests are asked to don formal gowns and tuxedos. And even on informal nights, a jacket is required for men. If a red carpet look is not for you, you may eat dinner in your khakis and jacket. Cocktail dress or stylish separates for ladies. In the King's Court food hall. But I never do. Entering the dining room like Cary Grant in An Affair to Remember never gets old for me. Grant, in fact, sailed on the QE2, as did Elizabeth Taylor, Bob Hope, and other notables. The experience, however, is not just for the rich or famous. As on most ships, fare for the week's passage is based on the size of your cabin and the season. On the lower end, you might pay around $1,200 a person for a tiny inside room in late spring, while on the same journey, big spenders will shell out many thousands more for an enormous suite with a personal butler. The price also determines where you eat, with those paying the least gathered in 2 sittings in the Grand Britannia dining room, the bigger spenders are split among 3 more exclusive rooms, the Britannia Club, the Princess Grill, and at the pinnacle, the Queen's Grill, where the food and service are said to be perfection. It's a bit out of my price range. With no ports of call, the ocean liner itself is the destination, offering, among other diversions, a golf simulator, paddle tennis courts, 5 swimming pools, a cinema, yoga classes, acting workshops, and a nightclub that features 1970s and 80s theme parties. Or you can simply stroll on the wide teak promenade that encircles the ship. 3 times around is a mile. Why do I keep going back? To join the queue at the Queen's Room for afternoon tea and freshly baked scones, served by waiters in white gloves while a string quartet plays. To treat myself to perfectly fried fish and chips in the consummately British Golden Lion pub, and to recreate that feeling of freedom I first had in 1992 when the QE2 left land and my problems behind. A first-timer's guide. 1. When choosing in which direction to sail, eastbound, you lose 1 hour on 5 different days but arrive without jet lag. Westbound, you get 5 25-hour days and that magical entrance into New York Harbor. 2. Once aboard, quickly reserve the behind-the-scenes tour, a fascinating look at how the ship works. It's offered once per crossing, and even at $120 per person, it sells out fast. 3. Learn the lingo. You're on an ocean liner, not a cruise ship, and you're making a crossing, not taking a cruise. 4. If you're into putting on the Ritz, bring a tux or gown, or take it down a notch with a suit or cocktail dress. But most of the voyage you'll want casual wear and comfy shoes, and bring a jacket or wrap for warmth. The North Atlantic can be blustery. Trip 2. Darwin's World. A nature lover splurges on a Galapagos dream cruise by Kitty Bean Yancey. For nearly 5 decades, I had imagined experiencing Ecuador's Galapagos Islands and their exotic species. Last year, I finally signed on for a week-long small ship cruise called Following in Darwin's Footsteps. The Ecuadorian government limits sailings to the archipelago's nearly 2 dozen islands to protect the precious habitats where Charles Darwin famously studied evolution. but there are still plenty of Galapagos cruises of varying prices and ship sizes. We could have opted to spend less than $2,000 each on a budget cruise, but my partner Barry and I decided this once-in-a-lifetime trip was worth a major splurge. We chose the elegant 18-passenger M.Y. Grace, the refurbished 1928 motor yacht that carried actress Grace Kelly and Monaco's Prince Rainier on their honeymoon in 1956. The cruise is run by Quasar Expeditions. Thanks to a last-minute cancellation, we scored a top-deck master suite for a discounted $5,400 per person. 2018 published rates for the Grace start at $5,600 per person, double, including all meals and activities. Our cruise departed from the island of Baltra with a welcoming strawberry drink and an introduction to our guides and fellow passengers. Lead guide Rafael Pesantes, he went by Rafa, spelled out the rules: no touching flora or fauna, no littering or taking souvenirs. We'd be calling it 9 islands, most uninhabited. The days took on an agreeable rhythm. I'd awakened around dawn to soft music piped into the cabin. The boat had no alarm clocks, TVs, or internet service. We took shore excursions on little rubber motorized boats, dubbed pangas, to visit sea lions flopping on the beach among scuttling orange-hued crabs. I saw dozens of iguanas with spiky backs slithering over volcanic rocks and crept near a red-footed booby with large webbed feet and a blue bill. We also hiked, kayaked, and snorkeled, despite the occasional hammerhead shark. Then one day near the end of our trip, I was relaxing on the sun deck when I heard the buzz of an outboard motor and Rafa exhorting us to come now. Soon we were perched on the sides of a panga, peering down at dozens of big green turtles cruising below, stubby flippers flapping as they negotiated the current. Mesmerized, I impulsively borrowed Rafa's snorkel mask and leaped into the cove. We had been instructed not to touch the creatures, but some brushed close by, peering at me inquisitively. When Rafa signaled that we had to go, I reluctantly hoisted myself up, appreciating that such spontaneous travel moments are so often the most unforgettable ones. First-timer's guide. 1. You'll find warmer, calmer waters here from December through March. 2. Guayaquil on mainland Ecuador has the closest airport to the Galapagos, a 1.5-hour flight, but you can also fly to and from more charming Quito, 2 hours. 3. A hat, strong sunblock, and a swim shirt to wear while snorkeling are musts. Trip 3. A tale of 2 Panama Canal cruises. Small ship or big ship, why size matters. As the sun dropped low on the horizon, my wife Colleen and I joined 3 dozen other passengers on the deck of our small cruise ship to watch, awestruck, as the vessel slipped into Gatun locks, then was lifted some 30 yards above sea level to the man-made Gatun Lake, the first of 3 sets of locks we'd soon pass through. We were at the Caribbean mouth of the 50-mile-long Panama Canal on a week-long journey with uncruise adventures from Panama City to San Jose, Costa Rica. The canal, a magnificent feat of engineering that the United States opened for shipping traffic in 1914, has been under Panama's control since 1999 and is a key passage from one side of the Americas to the other for about 14,000 ships every year. As our ship, Safari Voyager, and all 36 of us on it were lifted skyward, I recalled what a different experience it was to take this same journey. I'm sorry, I'm going to start that sentence again. I recalled what a different experience it was to take this same journey on a much larger boat. Just 2 years earlier, I had cruised the canal on the much larger Celebrity Infinity. Ships such as the Infinity filled the entire lock chamber. We could have reached out and touched the walls from our stateroom balcony. That ship provided spacious viewing areas at the bow, spots that got extremely crowded as people rose early to witness the massive vessel passing under the bridge of the Americas and entering the first set of locks, the Miraflores locks, on the Pacific side, to the canal. And it was a visually stunning cruise, especially for my first time at the Panama Canal. It was helpful that the night before I'd seen a documentary about the building of the canal, and an expert from Panama came aboard to give a talk for part of the crossing. The locks were a highlight of the Infinity's two-week transit from San Francisco to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which also included stops in Monterey, California, and Cabo San Lucas and Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, before reaching the canal and Cartagena, Colombia, and the Caribbean afterward. But the overall journey was that of a classic ship-focused cruise, with everyone enjoying bars where mixologists stirred up vodka-soaked refreshments, and there were multiple restaurants and sun decks, as well as pools and couples' massages. Our spacious cabin offered amenities such as fancy toiletries, a mini-fridge, room service meals, and a balcony. Excursions included city tours, boat rides in Gatun Lake to spot monkeys, and tram tours in the rainforest. On the small boat, there were no discos or spas, but we found some serious camaraderie. It was easy to bond with our little group of passengers, most of whom were 50 and older, like me. We stayed in the heart of the Panama Canal region for several days, with an emphasis on exploring it in an active and intimate way. We fully immersed ourselves in the remote wilderness of Central America. The itinerary included small group activities such as snorkeling in the turquoise waters near Panama's Isla Iguana and walking with our guides in the jungles of Costa Rica's Peninsula de Osa. We often were the sole people at a destination, entering protected areas and national parks as accessible only to small vessels such as ours. In Coiba National Park, off Panama's Pacific coast, we rowed skiffs ashore to the secluded tiny islet of Granito de Oro. We were greeted by thousands of hermit crabs crawling the sands and nibbling at our toes, then donned snorkel masks and fins to enter a magnificent technicolor underwater world of fish and coral. Back aboard, we were happy to fall into bed for a restful night's sleep in our small but comfortable and functional stateroom, well aware that this trip was less about the boat and more about the spectacular places it could take us. First-timer's guide. You are in the tropics and will need insect repellent, sunblock, a good hat, a rain jacket, and clothes that protect your arms and legs. Bring comfortable hiking shoes that can get wet and muddy. 2. Invest in a camera and lens that can shoot well at a distance. You want the best chance to catch those epic images of whales breaching and scarlet macaws and monkeys in the trees. 3. Study the canal's history to better appreciate the journey. A couple of good books are The Path Between the Seas, The Creation of the Panama Canal, 1870 to 1914, by David McCulloch, and Panama Fever by Matthew Parker. You might also watch PBS's A Man, A Plan, A Canal, Panama, available as a DVD narrated by McCulloch. Need help booking your next cruise? Whether you are an experienced cruiser or just curious about what the various options are, you will find helpful information on AARP's travel website at aarp.org/cruises. There you can read stories about several different cruise experiences, as well as tips on how to make the most of your next sailing adventure. And now under AARP's Personal Best section, the first item we have is one entry to the collection of 50 Reasons to Love Being 50 Plus. This is from Peter Comstock, who's 71 years old and head of the Homestead School in Glenspey, New York. So reason number 6 to love being 50 plus is you've got history on tap. My wife and I live on land that my great-grandfather settled. We run a Montessori school here, and one thing we do with the kids is make maple syrup. My grandfather planted the sugar maple in our playground. When I'm long gone, that tree will still produce sap, as will trees I planted at the births of my own grandchildren. I take comfort in the humility that comes from being part of timeless rituals like boiling sap into syrup over a fire pit at night, watching the sparks rising to meet the Milky Way. Can do that to a person. And next under personal best is My Cause. La Isla Bonita. Roberto Clemente Jr. fights hunger in Puerto Rico and around the world. Roberto Clemente Jr. is 52 and he's a sports broadcaster. Having a superstar athlete for a father and namesake was never easy. I remember telling my mom that I wanted to have a name of my own. As I grew up, though, I came to realize that the name is a blessing. People appreciate my dad for what he did as a right fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates, sure, but they also remember him as someone who always wanted to help. That's how we lost him. His plane went down over the Atlantic in 1972 as he was traveling to Nicaragua to deliver aid to earthquake victims. I was only 7 when it happened. I grew up in Puerto Rico, where my mom always helped people when she could. Helping is all that I know. When I played Little League ball, I would see kids, even adults, asking the players for something to eat. Now, as the global ambassador for Food for the Hungry and its Striking Out Poverty initiative, I see that need everywhere, but especially in areas far removed from where government agencies look for it. Our goal is to reach people and teach them how to stand on their own. We are learning most recently that a lack of clean drinking water is a major issue. The people of Puerto Rico are still suffering after the devastation of Hurricane Maria, and they are still drinking contaminated water. We are using donations to distribute water across the island and the U.S. Virgin Islands. In a way, I'm working to bring my cause full circle. I'm not just the son of a Major League Baseball player. I was a player myself. And I'd like to get the league involved in what we're doing. In some places in Africa where Food for the Hungry works, there are kids who don't have any idea what baseball is. Young people there do not just need something to eat, but something to do. My dream is that we solve hunger in these places while helping to create major leaguers. To learn more or to donate to Food for the Hungry's relief efforts, go to fh.org/Clemente. That's Clemente. And his personal best, My Team. Rolling with the Punches. Information technology worker Mary Roberts found her people at the skating rink. 12 years ago, I'd skate the parking lot at work during breaks. A fellow employee told me about the Fayetteville, North Carolina Roller Derby, and I couldn't wait to try out for it. My derby name is Slipknot. Since I'm not the strongest, toughest gal out there, I picked a name that would intimidate. I play with women of all ages, not just the over 50s. Since I started, my overall physical conditioning has improved. I've been motivated to lift weights. Before joining, my bones were deteriorating in my lower spine and hip. The pain was keeping me up at night, but after 4 months of training, the muscles in my hip area developed and the night pain stopped. I've got to show those people, the women in my league, that age has absolutely no limit. All you have to do is bring your passion, willpower, and game. And that's Mary Roberts. Now we're out of time of today's Modern Maturity, but I hope you'll come back next week and that you've enjoyed this. I'm Florence Nash, reading for Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's programming is generously underwritten by Saliva Chiropractic, who welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long till next time.